Thanks for listening and for being a part of Jason Q's Citizen and Friends on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the second hour of my show, a show dedicated to all the citizen journalists that are out there that are fighting for the truth against a system that leaves us scratching our heads and fighting against the tyranny that has been put upon us at least over the last 3 years, and certainly it feels a lot longer than that. Listening to the news and hearing that Joe Biden is reassuring 60 Minutes that he's going to be in it for the long haul, and one has to start to question what it really is all about. Is the Ukrainian war an exercise in the NATO countries flexing their muscle? Is it a money laundering operation? And is Putin truly the bad guy in all of this? And I'll be delighted to have Ross Cameron in just a few minutes' time to be able to compare notes and get his take on what he sees. I also want to talk to Ross about the climate, about how it affects the economy in this country here, and how we're going to afford to help our kids purchase their first second-hand vehicle in a few years' time if all the EVs require $25,000 batteries before you can keep them on the road after they hit that affordable stage when they hit the 10-year mark. And another big topic that we'll talk to Ross about is, of course, the COVID scenario, the origins of COVID now as they're starting to seep into the mainstream and people asking questions, where did it come from and who is to blame? Because the Great Reset might be what the establishment globalists want, but perhaps if they get caught out, then they might be paying rather than telling us who will be doing the paying. Now, in other news and important news to discuss in this hour, stories that have come up over the weekend that are really important to discuss, one of them is regarding US veteran suicides are far higher than reported. According to RT, a study of former troops are taking their own lives at a rate about 2.4 times that the government is saying, researchers have found. And also a study last year by Brown University found that over four times as many US soldiers and veterans have died by suicide than in combat since America's war on terror began way back in September of 2001. That is a devastating number to realize that there are that many veterans that are committing suicide and obviously feel like that they have no more hope or purpose in their lives. It's disgraceful. And when you can go out there and push wars and pay money to foreign countries to perpetuate other wars at a time when Noam Chomsky comes out and says that Trump was right and diplomacy is needed. And I'm sure that Ross will be able to talk about that shortly as well. Now, with Trump in the news, and he certainly is, and there's a terrific interview with him and John Voigt going around, which is wonderful, but also Trump came out and said that Germany could be left without a country soon. The ex-president has said that he warned Angela Merkel that Berlin's dependence on Russian energy could lead to a surrender. Very interesting. Germany could cease to exist as a country amid the escalating energy crisis, former US President Donald Trump has suggested. During a rally in Youngstown, Ohio on Saturday, Trump tore into his successor in the White House, taking aim at Biden's energy policy and the so-called Green New Deal. The Republican firebrand, that's what they call him, claimed that although his rule, the US had become independent in terms of energy and on track to become totally dominant, bigger than Saudi Arabia and Russia combined, Biden has since reduced the US to begging for energy. Trump then went on to cite Germany's sorry state of affairs in this area. According to the ex-president, he warned then-Chancellor Merkel that Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which was supposed to pump Russian gas to Germany, would make Berlin even more dependent on Russian energy exports. Trump said he had sent the white flag of surrender to Merkel when she refused to ditch the project. If you're getting 72% of your energy from Russia, here's the white flag because you will be surrendering very quickly, the former US head of state recounted his own warning to Merkel. Truly, truly extraordinary times. Trump is far from gone and probably the most important player in this entire scenario of the restructure of planet Earth. Don't miss out on a thing. Be sure to download the TNT Radio app from either the Apple App Store or Google Play so you can easily listen to us anywhere, anytime. Available right now to download, keeping you up to speed on TNT Radio.
News and talk you can count on.
I can rely on that.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Ross Cameron was the former member for Parramatta. He is what he refers to himself as a fair and balanced citizen, and was also formerly a commentator on Sky News. And anyone who's a former anything is now free to speak on whatever they would like to do on TNT Radio. And I welcome the libertarian Ross Cameron to Jason Q Citizen and Friends.
Thanks for having me.
It's wonderful, Ross, to have you on the show. And there is just so much going on in the world. It feels like that we're getting fresh headlines every 5 minutes. The news cycle is just getting smaller and smaller and shorter and shorter, and we're just getting pounded with this information. You can't help but think that the world is being restructured as we are seeing it.
Yeah, we're at an interesting phase in the life of our culture, our civilization. And we know from those who have studied culture and civilization, somebody like, for example, we had a study of 20 civilizations by a husband and wife team, Will and Ariel Durant. And Ariel, for which they won a Pulitzer Prize, and Marcus Aurelius, the Roman Emperor, says that you must always begin by looking at the whole. You must, if you wish to understand your position in the universe, you must understand the whole picture and where you fit into it. And Ariel Durant is actually, accredited with the quote that no great civilization ever collapses from external threat until it has defeated itself by a loss of will to survive. And in my judgment, I mean, I don't wish to be a negative Nelly, we'll all be ruined. But I just think if you look at the data objectively, you have to form the view that Western civilization is poised on the brink of its collapse. It's been a very good sort of 500 years, but it seems to me that we are like the marine mammal, which is determined to beach itself, which has lost the will to survive. I mean, you just gave a report on the news about the number of former veterans who are taking their own lives. In my view, Zero Carbon 2050 is a cultural suicide note, and unless there is a radical change of sentiment, we're just collectively signing up to a cultural suicide note.
Yeah, Ross, that was so beautifully put. I mean, I wouldn't think that being able to explain a cultural suicide in the form of a note the way that you have by Zero Carbon 2050, but that's exactly what's going on. And I appreciate that you're able to explain quite succinctly that the Western society really truly is on the brink of a collapse here, and using this green energy scenario as the way to bring it in after they've brought in the process of compliance here through the COVID system that's gone on. In your time both in and out of the political realms and in and out of the media and watching this and observing everything that's going on here, when did you arrive at this conclusion that you've just delivered? Was it something that you've seen coming for a while and all the pieces are falling into place, or was it a light bulb moment, a matter of, what, months or a year or two ago?
Look, I would say that, for my own journey, each of us is on a different sort of path, but I would say about a decade ago, as a former member of the Howard government for three terms and, as a member for Parramatta in the federal parliament, I kind of went in there as a happy volunteer, believing that we were trying to do good for Australia. We're all a mixture of motives. We're all a bit self-interested. But, the hope is that there is a corpus of commitment to the national interest. And I guess over time, since I can see that experience and perspective, I have the feeling that in truth, my own government had basically given up you know, we were, I suppose, better than the alternative, but there was no ambition within the Howard government to rebuild the Australian dream, if you like. We were committed to, you know, reducing, the credit to the Howard government is that we reduced the Commonwealth deficit to zero, but we didn't actually reduce the size of the state. And that is the key, the key indicator. And if you have a relatively small population-wise Pacific country with only, say, 26 million, or now maybe it's 27, I don't know the exact number, around there, you've got to be able to wash your own face, you know, and that means you've got to be able to pay your own bills. And the truth is that we are engaged in a kind of delusion where we wish to embrace all of the strictures and orthodoxy and religious doctrine of what of the sort of New World Order of the World Economic Forum. But at the same time, we wish to, quote, keep the lights on. And the truth is we can't do both. And just as you have reported, I mean, President Joe Biden is saying we are giving an iron, the White House gives an ironclad guarantee to support the, you know, the war in Ukraine. Yet at the same time we give a guarantee we are going to get inflation under control. Well, the truth is those two objectives are entirely inconsistent. They are a logical fallacy. There is no way to do both. That if you take a country, in this case Russia, which is providing 40% of Europe's energy, and you provoke a war with that country in such a way that there is no conceivable way that they will continue to provide the gas to Germany and to Europe, then there is just absolutely no way you can avoid a massive spike in inflation, in energy costs alone. But then you add to that 2 years of a kind of global economic lockdown in response to a respiratory virus. Then add to that the third string in the bow, which is to provoke a permanent Cold War against China, the most productive nation in the world. You combine those three and you've got a perfect storm. And you are going to be facing galloping inflation in terms of energy costs, both electricity, petrol and diesel, and also in terms of the cost of capital, which is galloping, you know, in Australia, in Europe, elsewhere around the world, where we have enjoyed a long period of very stable and low inflation rates. I don't know. I don't believe there is a ceiling on the cost of capital. And Australia has experienced 18 and 20% inflation rates under the so-called recession we had to have under Paul Keating. And nothing, I don't see any break. So long as we continue the war against Ukraine and the provocation of China, and the you know, war against the Earth's temperature, there is no. It's very interesting as a matter of physics. Heat, cold has a flaw. You know, if you remove all energy from an environment, you reach absolute zero. And you can't get below, there's no lower temperature than absolute zero.
Yes.
Whereas heat, on the other hand, has no known ceiling, because heat is related to the amount of energy, and the more energy, the more heat. So if you, for example, had a star, which is a million times the size of our sun, which exists in the universe, you know, you can have levels of heat which we have never before experienced. And all I say is the same is true of things like you know, interest rates. There's actually not a ceiling on how high they can really go. And if you deliberately choose to destroy the supply chain, you know, to kind of tell farmers to kill their cattle, to raise the price of fuel so a truck driver can't afford to haul a B-double to the supermarket. If you tell farmers not to grow crops to keep the earth's temperature down, the kind of, we are looking at a civilization event, in my opinion.
Yeah. It's so obvious to those that can see it, and yet those that can't see it, that are following along with the narrative that the mainstream continually tries to present, they're not allowed to see it, they're not allowed to talk about it, and yet here we are being presented with it in real time. So one wonders when it might be that the average person in the street goes, something's not right and not right already. I know that I run into them. Maybe it's my profile. Perhaps it's in my local area where I stood as a candidate. But people are coming up to me and telling me that they're starting to see the obvious. And the first one, of course, is the rise in interest rates and how quickly they've been since May of this year, where they've risen by 2.25. And now you've got the governor of the Reserve Bank, Philip Lowe, coming out and saying, well, he expects housing prices to drop by 10%. So the next interest rate rise might just be a half of what it was in the previous 4 months. I mean, how generous. But no indication of where the end might be, no indication of when we're going to start to stagger them out to give people a chance to plan with their fixed interest rates, for example. People might want to start fixing components, but there's none of that. It's just like the ultimate shock in the system, and it seems like all of these characters in this big play are all waiting to have their turn, and it's the governor's turn right now. Ross, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about a whole lot more about what's going on, obviously about interest rates. We need to talk more about should the government, in fact, be telling the people what they're going to do with the price of oil in terms of taxation and excise going forward into the future, because where do you go when you're almost being coerced into buying an electric vehicle that you can't afford? Or do you keep holding on to your old technology car? So many questions. We're here with Ross Cameron. Don't go anywhere. You're on TNT Radio.
Dolores Cahill on TNT Radio.
In 2020, I was invited, we'll say, onto a radio show. But the presenter said, this was now when I was warning about, well, and saying there was prevention and treatment and ivermectin, but this was like May, June of 2020. The presenter said, I know what you're doing is right, but 90% of our funding now comes from the government under this COVID-19 issue. And therefore, he said, I am going to not allow you to speak, and I'm going to essentially harass you so that you can't get your message out. Because if I don't do that, all the funding will be cut to the radio station and I'll be fired. So I actually said to him before the interview, I said, this is time for you to make a decision and to allow people to speak so that people don't die. And not put, get another job, basically. I think what was interesting is that information was that 90% of the income came from the government only on condition that the radio stations censor people and don't allow people to hear the information that there was prevention and treatment.
Weekends with Dolores Cahill on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
In 2018, 2.9 million people died of the flu and pneumonia. In 2020, there was a 98% decline in influenza, but 2.8 million die of COVID. Data never lies. We mandate that the truth be told. TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program. I'm here with Ross Cameron, former member for the seat of Parramatta in the Howard Liberal government, and has certainly evolved a lot since then. Ross, do you think that the government of the day needs to point out to the average people in the street what they intend to do to the price of energy, in particular petrol and diesel going forward?
Well, Jason, I think, this is a 10-year story. We had Malcolm Turnbull, before he became Prime Minister, on the record saying that anyone who tells you that you can transition from a carbon to a, quote, renewables economy without an increase in prices is either deluded or lying. And we then listened to the next 10 years of, in fairness, both major parties and the Greens saying that the renewable alternative will be cheaper, and that you will experience cheaper fuel prices if we have greater reliance on intermittent, low-intensity sources of energy, such as wind, solar, and batteries. And what we're finding is a perfect correlation in the graph between the percentage of intermittent sources and the increasing cost of energy. So you've got Australia, which was when God created Australia, or Australia was created out of the atoms and the void by accident, whichever you prefer. We received this endowment, this inheritance of the world's most beautiful seam of black coal. We received 40% of the world's uranium in one hole in the ground at Olympic Dam. We have a whole continent, an island continent to ourselves, the only nation who owns a whole continent. And yet we find, in spite of the fact that Alexander Graham Bell and others discovered the principles of generation electricity, almost 200 years ago, we have got an energy grid which is on its last legs. We are playing a game of Jumanji, which you may recall is the game where you make a pile of blocks out of wooden sticks, and then you pull them out one by one and see which is the last stick which causes the whole thing to collapse. And of course, the individual sticks are the major coal-fired power stations. And once you create a regulatory environment which destroys the motive to invest in your existing coal assets, you rapidly increase their obsolescence and their rate of retirement. And so we have a sequence. Each of the major energy generators and retailers are saying we're going to pull our coal-fired stations out faster than expected. They do it because on the one hand they say, oh, we're responding to the demand for green energy. On the other hand, they do it because it no longer makes sense to invest in an asset which they have to retire anyway. The person who pays the price is the mug citizen who has no choice but to accept the tariff of the energy coming out of the PowerPoint in the lounge room. So, there is a fundamental dishonesty taking place because the New World Order, Green New Deal, World Economic Forum has resolved to sell its program on the basis that it will make energy cheaper, whereas anyone with five functioning senses can see the price on the energy bill. So there is this fundamental unresolved tension between the official narrative and the actual experience. And I would love the government to be more honest, but I don't expect it to begin anytime soon.
And so it feels like that the government of the day is so programmed in its agenda, and they're not talking about the deficit, they're not talking about the cost of anything. It's just simply that we're going to achieve this. And then in the background, you've got Adam Bandt, who's just cheerleading along and telling us all that now we've got to freeze rents. Landlords don't get a say in that with rising interest rates, but rents have to be freezed because people can't afford to live. And of course, that has to be shifted onto the poor old landlord that may just be a mum and dad themselves with having a bit of a branch out for their retirement. And so the government can simply just come out in a few months' time and say, well, we're putting 10 cents on the price of the excise. This will be an encouragement to go out and purchase an electric vehicle. And then they could just keep going like there's no end in how much they can tax the price of fuel. And we've seen that specifically with cigarettes and alcohol in this country, that they just tax because it becomes one of those things that they can. But one thing they can't do is they can't turn oil off yet, because you just can't do that. But they won't even have the conversation. I feel like in all of this, that there are just no conversations that you can have with your politicians anymore. It's simply, we are an elected democratic dictatorship, and that's just the way that it's going to be. You're just not allowed to have any of those conversations. Does it feel as obvious as it seems, Ross, to you?
Yeah, I think this is partly the reason why you get this absolute obsession on the progressive left with language. And with the idea of, quote, offence, which is the operative provision in the legislation governing speech, is that you're not allowed to cause offence. The problem with it is that offence is an entirely subjective concept.
Correct.
And indeed, you know, Marcus Aurelius would say the best thing to do with an insult is to leave it in the field in which it was delivered. We always have the option not to be offended. But once we say that offence is going to this entirely subjective thing, is going to be the speed governor of debate in a culture, what you do is you create the capability to silence one side of the debate, and you can create an orthodoxy, approved speech, if you like, which by definition is non-scientific, because, you know, certainly since the time of the modern scientific world, with people like Roger Bacon, René Descartes, Francis Bacon, the whole principle of science is that ideas must be contestable. And if an idea is not contestable, it's not scientific. And what we have at the moment is a post-democratic state in Australia and the United States, where there is an approved orthodoxy, which must not be contested. And if you do dare to contest it, you will be stigmatized, you will be marginalized, you will be sacked. Whether that relates to mandatory injection of experimental drugs, or whether indeed the world is facing a crisis of global warming as a consequence of anthropogenic climate change. So we have become one hand clapping. We have become just a pure post-democratic, post-scientific orthodoxy. And every citizen is then faced with a choice whether they wish to live a more peaceful life in compliance with the bullies who are running the operation, or whether they wish to risk, you know, standing out, putting the head above the parapet, getting belted, ostracized, shamed, and silenced, and in some cases imprisoned. So that is the difficult moment in which every citizen finds themselves. We didn't choose this moment, but this moment has chosen us.
Yeah, well said. We're going to pause for news headlines. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about COVID, about the climate, about Russia, and a little bit more about China in the time that remains. Don't go anywhere. This is TNT Radio.
Darren Metzer here with a look at your TNT Radio news headlines. A magnitude 6.8 earthquake has hit southeast Taiwan, wreaking devastation and sparking tsunami warnings. Also, Senator Ted Cruz has slammed President Joe Biden, alleging he is the biggest human trafficker on the face of the planet. and King Charles III has released a heartfelt thank you to the world on Sunday night ahead of his mother, Queen Elizabeth II's state funeral.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Ross, yesterday, or maybe even this morning, an article came out that from the former director of the CDC, Dr. Robert Redfield, has asserted in a new interview that everyone has to agree the narrative pushed by Fauci and other health officials that the virus came from a wet market in Wuhan and not the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And he is saying that Fauci has clearly misled the Congress. For mine, the origins of this virus are everything. If we can show that this was man-made somehow, escaped from a lab, either willingly or accidentally, it certainly changes the narrative and it means that certain people have to be held to account. And it would also expose the agenda of the one-size-fits-all solution. Have you got any thoughts on the COVID fiasco that has emerged?
Yes, well, the origins of COVID is still a very live question. And in my judgment, there is no clear answer. And this ought not to really surprise us, since, again, if we take the Marcus Aurelius advice and always begin by looking at the whole, we have to appreciate that there are indeed 300,000 separate viruses which have been identified among the mammal vertebrates alone. And the virus is a prodigiously powerful and effective, I would say, life form. Indeed, when you go back and look at the tree of life, you see the plants, you see the animalia, in which we are obviously a member, you see the bacteria, you see the archaea, and then very often you see a dotted line to the virus, because the virus behaves a bit differently to the other four major branches in the tree of life, because the virus sits, in effect, static and unregenerative for most of its life. But then if it finds a host, it has this unbelievable power of reproduction where it can replicate itself 100,000 times in a matter of seconds once it finds a host. But nonetheless, there are, in the macro, in the whole, we know there are at least 300,000 viruses in the warm-blooded vertebrate mammalian species. So the question of where this particular virus came from, I mean, we ought never to underestimate the extraordinarily inventive power of any individual virus. And, you know, we were initially instructed that the virus came from a wet market in Wuhan by transfer from a bat. And indeed, I think it was 60 Minutes Australia. It might have been the 7:30 report. I hope I don't unfairly slander someone, who wished to promote the Wuhan wet market theory. And so they, because they actually couldn't get into China or Wuhan at the time, they just sent a film crew to Thailand and filmed a wet market in Bangkok. The point is that there is zero evidence that any wet market in Wuhan ever sold a single bat. I mean, this was just a bit of anti-Chinese prejudice. There is no bat soup in Wuhan. Indeed, I believe there are no bats in Wuhan. So then you have somebody like Shari Markson, the News Limited journalist, has published a book, you know, and I believe it does nothing further to certainly establish the origins of the virus. And indeed, there's very significant evidence that the virus was in circulation, indeed, in Europe and in other parts of China well before the December 2019 first report of the virus in Wuhan. And so I think the answer is we don't know where it came from. We do know that the United States was sponsoring and funding, quote, gain of function research, end quote, into viruses at the Wuhan Viral Laboratory. Mm-hmm. And it's entirely plausible that we had an escape from the Wuhan lab. But in my judgment, we don't know for sure. And indeed, if we go all the way back in history, as I prefer to do, we could go to the Epicurean work of Lucretius, which is called De Rerum Natura, which described the outbreak of the Athenian plague in about 430 BC, when Athens was indeed under a siege by the Spartans, and they all retreated inside the walls of the city. And inside the walls of the city, they succumbed to a plague in which about a third of them died. And we don't know exactly what it was. Some people think it was smallpox, but we sort of don't know for sure. We just know a lot of people died. But the point that Lucretius makes is that, you know, pathogens can come from anywhere. You can walk into contaminated air, or the contaminated air may be blown into you. But as you inhale through your mouth and nose, you actually have no filter to distinguish between the pathogen and the healthy air. And so he says it is a waste of time to spend a vast amount of energy trying to figure out where this pathogen came from. Indeed, if we go to the Bible, the four horsemen of the apocalypse, we have war, we have famine, we have wild animals, and we have disease. And according to the Bible, you know, 25% of the Earth's population is subject to one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. And I think there is a wisdom in the ancients, and there is a great deal to be said for not worrying about where the thing came from, but focusing energy and attention on what to do about it. And I believe it was in the interests of the sort of Atlantic states to find a way to blame China for this thing. The truth is, the United States and Fauci was sending millions of dollars to the laboratory in Wuhan because they couldn't get approval to run gain-of-function research in the United States, so they looked around to find other jurisdictions who they could pay to undertake the dangerous work. And indeed, I see the same principle in operation in the war in Ukraine, if I may say. I mean, my position is unorthodox. I am, I suppose, not in the, what we are led to believe is majority opinion on the pages of the Sydney Morning Herald, the Australian newspaper and the Guardian, which is that this is a just and moral fight for the independence of Ukraine, whereas I regard it as a money laundering operation by NATO and the Atlantic states, who don't wish to actually risk their own blood. I mean, Joe Biden says we'll stand shoulder to shoulder with Ukraine, quote, for as long as it takes. He won't send any American soldiers in there. You know, Peter Dutton, yep, my own former party, the Liberal Party, has sent, I think, $70 million worth of guns, bullets and bombs and Bushmaster, you know, quasi-tanks, most of which got destroyed in the first 10 minutes after they got off the plane. But it's a money laundering operation. And Australia is saying to Zelensky in Ukraine, oh, we think your war is good enough that we're happy to send you $70 million taxpayer-funded weapons, but it's not good enough that we would ever send an Australian soldier. And so this is the new gutless, cowardly doctrine of the West, that we wish to promote wars in other countries to which we will send bombs and bullets, but we won't send any of our own troops.
We watch closely in what's happening there, and it all, it seems to be a combination of Zelensky in his latest celebrity photograph holding up the latest check that he's received from somebody in the US government or around Europe. And I note that last week only Bill Gates came out and said that the European countries are going to go broke giving money to Ukraine. In other words, he was crying poor for the European governments and expecting somehow that what the general public are going to go and donate more money for this perpetual money laundering operation that is going on in Ukraine. Seems to be nothing else. I mean, we heard reports early on of the bio labs that had been raided. We don't hear anything more than that. We saw that the Russian government went before the United Nations and made their allegations only to sort of be laughed out of it all. So there was clearly another purpose that the mainstream media doesn't want to touch out there in Ukraine. So your unorthodox comments, Ross, are more than welcome here on TNT Radio, because we need to be having these very important conversations that no one wants to talk about. And it seems the subjects that you are not allowed to talk about is exactly what you need to do, is to get in there, do the research, and talk about them. And for mine, going back, just circling back there on the origins of COVID, it seems to me that it's the ultimate sleight of hand that we don't look at to where they are. And yes, there are multiple plausible theories on the origins of the virus, but the thing that I simply cannot get past is how can we let or hand over our medical sovereignty to the World Health Organization and say we're going to sign up to a future pandemic treaty that they will be able to dictate from the other side of the planet what we would do here in Australia should COVID 3.0 be invented or happen to fall out on the world in the future, and we just have to do what they say without ever getting to the truth of the matter. And this is where I find that the posturing and the politicking in what's going on just never seems to get down to the real meat and potatoes, which is we need to find out what's going on here, because the gain of function just can't be allowed to go on. And it was banned under Obama, but somehow it still goes on here. And then we've got to circle around it. And Fauci's walking scot-free today, not having to answer, and seems to have people now coming out and saying the opposite. He did know what was going on. He did mislead Congress. This man has a case to answer. Now, I will pause on that because we've got to take another break. But Ross, when we come back, we chance to reflect and then also talk about a bit more about China, because it is one of your areas of expertise. And we need to hear a lot more about what's going on there, because we've got to get another perspective, because could China be actually the enemy of the globalists, but also wanting to perhaps expand in their power? So much to talk about. This is TNT Radio.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th.
With his expert analysis and opinion,
this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
It's axiomatic that no is the most powerful word in the English language because it's true. It's also axiomatic that the squeaky wheel gets the grease, or, in our current climate, that the whiny, perpetually outraged, permanently aggrieved leftist gets all the media love, hand-wringing, and pearl-clutching. The latest to face this toddler temper tantrum is Pat Sajak, who had the temerity to have a picture taken with Congressman Marjorie Taylor Greene. We can't keep taking these people seriously. Every single time they come up with one of their stupid whines, they need to hear no. So whether you say non in French, nein in German, or niet in Russian, just say no to loser leftists with their perpetual whines. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
One day, my 8-year-old son, Michael, was playing football with his friends in the mud and got an infection that led to sepsis.
Sepsis is your body's toxic response to an infection that can lead to tissue damage to extremities.
They needed to do 2 upper amputations and 2 below the knee.
Sepsis causes an average of 38 amputations per day in the United States. To learn more, go to sepsis.org.
Democracy is under attack. Western governments are trying to regulate the internet to shut down free speech. Australia and the UK are taking control of their domestic internet. What's next for the US? Lighting the fuse for freedom. This is TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program. I'm here with Ross Cameron. I'm having a terrific discussion today, Ross, about perspectives about all matters that are international concerning all of us out there in the world. But we move on to the subject of China, and the AUKUS alliance was the beginning of the unsettling, where China came out and pretty much told us that what we were doing was not what they approved of. And so therefore, there's this general feeling here that there's friction that didn't need to be there in the first place. What's your take on what China's involvement in all of this is, and is all the world really a stage?
Well, Jason, you know, I don't like being always in the opposition. You know, I'd prefer to be going with the current rather than swimming against it. But I find that if I begin simply with the principles of reason and rationality and taking the evidence as I find it, I find myself in the opposition at the current moment in relation to China. And, you know, I'm no fan of Karl Marx. I've got no enthusiasm for communism. I don't like authoritarian states. On the other hand, if I commit myself to look at the whole picture, as I think I'm obligated to do as a, quote, fair and balanced citizen, I have to admit the fact that the Chinese Communist Party has lifted over 1 billion people out of poverty since Deng Xiaoping. I also have to note that, you know, we have had a succession of federal parliamentary leaders, prime ministers of both political parties. We had a compact from the time Gough Whitlam recognised the People's Republic of China, where we were, Australia was among the early adopters. Since then, we've had, you know, what have we had? Gough Whitlam. We have had, you know, Malcolm Fraser. We have had Bob Hawke, Paul Keating, John Howard, Kevin Rudd. Then we went to Gillard. Then we went back to Rudd. Then we went Tony Abbott, Malcolm Turnbull, all of whom were telling the Australian people that it was in our interest to hitch the Australian wagon to the Chinese caboose, and that China, as about a sixth of the world's population, was not going anywhere, was one of the great seven civilizations of the earth, and that we could do business with these people. And indeed, the Chinese would say they spent a very long period of time in isolation, but at some risk and with fear and trepidation, they decided to accept the invitation to participate in the international trading community. And they said, you know, they said, well, we assumed that we could participate pari passu in a fair way, that if we were the most productive at the lowest price, we could sell our product into the market. And the problem for the Western world is that we didn't appreciate how fast China could evolve in its education, in its technology, in its embrace of capital, in its engineering capability. And so the Chinese, having accepted our invitation, went ahead and built the world's most productive economy. And indeed, if you look at even in terms of the culture of the joint, I mean, you've got one company, the Pearl River Piano Company, which is producing and selling 150,000 pianos every year, because every Chinese kid, in addition to learning English, Chinese, you know, maths, problem solving, etc., is also learning music. So what we found was we created this, encouraged the development of a capital-owning middle class, and then we got absolutely freaked out by how effective our partner, collaborator was. And so at a certain moment, about, you know, 2 years ago, Maurice Payne wandered out of the meeting with a group of American admirals and told Australia that China was, quote, our enemy. And so the problem is, I mean, I'm open-minded. People, mate, there's a range of views on the what I would regard as the rational enlightenment, conservative libertarian tradition. There's a range of views about China and indeed the Chinese Communist Party and the Chinese model, which is, quote, socialism with Chinese characteristics. But the problem for Australia is that we've spent four decades intimately knitting and integrating our resources, tourism and education-based economy into the Chinese middle class. Then our genius leaders wake up one morning and say, oh, those four decades were a mistake. And I just say to them, well, on behalf of Australian citizens, it would have been nice if you had woken up three decades earlier. And indeed, if we take one further step back, I simply say that when a culture loses belief in itself, okay, that loss of self-belief, which is the most vital national resource, is reflected in a whole range of different indicators, most fundamentally in the birth rate, but then secondly in the approach to entrepreneurship and risk and bureaucracy and the use of force by so-called Western liberal democratic governments. And what happens is you start losing options. You start when you've got a rival who is growing and who still enjoys self-belief, as I would say the Pan-Han Chinese nation and diaspora still has abundant self-belief. They wish to vindicate their failures over the 20th century with a glittering 21st century. They're still trying. They're still motivated. They have built 35,000 kilometres of high-speed rail. The United States has not built 1 kilometre of high-speed rail. Australia occupies a vast continent with a small number of small population along the beautiful coastline, but there is no prospect whatsoever we could build a high-speed rail between, say, Brisbane, Sydney, Canberra, Melbourne and Adelaide without Chinese labour and engineering. We can't do it ourselves. I mean, Australia has sent astronauts into orbit. Australia, can barely build a pagoda in the backyard as far as our space industry goes. So we are living in this dissonance. It's the tortoise and the hare. We are the hare of Aesop's fable. China has leapfrogged us in terms of technology. I mean, if you compare the airport in Shanghai with the airport in Los Angeles, you feel like Los Angeles is a third world developing country compared to Shanghai. Yeah. So I just say there is a come to Jesus moment where you, at the moment, we wish to live in this fantasy world, which is that, you know, China is a developing country, is hopeless, is got, you know, very limited capability, and we have all the answers. Whereas we find that our rival, more recently described, I believe, because we have no options left, as our enemy. And so now the West, in its sort of last days flailing around, since we have no competitive or productive response to China, all we can do is use the remaining available instruments to hold China's head underwater. And my problem as a citizen is that I think it actually drives the 1.35 million billion Chinese into the arms of the Chinese Communist Party, because we sit around dreaming up our foreign policy is basically a collection of insults. And, we're living in a fantasy land. And whilst that continues, we will continue our rapid decline.
Gosh, it's a profound answer, Ross. It's absolutely brilliant to get that perspective, because it's completely lost on the average politician. They're not seeing it. They don't want to see it. And one wonders if compartmentalization is what causes, you know, the lower level politician to just go along to get along in all of this. And yet this is something that you've been able to see probably from being in politics, but also from observation outside and in business. Why is it, we've only got 2 minutes left, but why is it you can pick this up and your former colleagues and the current people sitting there in the parliament are totally blind to it?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, it's a nice Dorothy Dixer you've given me, Jason. I mean, it's like, why am I so smart and everyone else is so dumb? But look, I can't avoid that conclusion. I think what happens is, Edward Gibbon in The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, he talked about the way in which incumbents sandbag their position. And so the incumbent seeks to find ways to destroy the merit principle, for example. The incumbent seeks to find ways to regulate speech and thought so there can be no challenge to their position. The incumbent seeks, as I say, to stigmatize anyone with an alternative opinion. And the incumbent then starts simply adopts a worldview which is purely about self-preservation. And that's why I say it's no longer really an argument about the left and the right in Western democratic politics. It's an argument about insiders and outsiders. And those who own the franchise, those who make the legislation. You have a massive protest in Canada by the truckers, and the Canadian government then goes ahead and destroys the access to donations from supporters of the truckers to starve them of funds. They don't respond to any of the truckers' actual concerns. They simply seek to destroy the movement by using their regulatory power, their monopoly of force, to deny the truckers from access.
We've run out of time, Ross. I'm sorry. I've got to cut you off. We've got to go to the news. That was Ross Cameron. Thanks very much. This is TNT.